Yeah, go ahead.
Can we assume that the symmetric key or the public key has already been exchanged, or do we need to have a solution for that?
There is nothing about key exchanges. There is a key to decrypt or encrypt, and then you're trying to find the key thinking
you
don't.
No,
no. Okay, we're going to get started. I did post the contact information for the grader, so that's more office hours in case you need help. The person who is the grader actually has been through the class, so he knows what goes on here, which is helpful. Okay, so I did say I'm not going to talk about the intricacies of encryption anymore, but I did make some mistakes in RC4, which I'm going to quickly correct. However, here's the thing. We talked about AES is, of course, the gold standard these days, but we talked about DES. We talked about RC4. Why? It's like boring stuff. It's not even in use. Well, this small part of the class covered how exactly it's done. Although I've been saying don't build your own, but I give you a project to do that. Don't build your own, which means that you don't really need to know. This is a black box. It's enough people have said it works fine, so you use it in various situations. But it's good to know what is in these things. How do these things actually work? That's an instantiation of a cryptographic algorithm. And similar things are used for hash functions and random number generators and things like that. So it's kind of good for you to know that. So RC4, again, I'm not going to spend time on it. It uses a 255-byte state. A state is an internal state of this engine that's going to do the encryption. That internal state is derived from a key or really a seed, because RC4 is actually a random number generator, which is a topic I'm going to cover today. So give it a seed, and the first part of the algorithm, the code is on Wikipedia, it's very simple. It takes this seed and it creates the state as 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 255, 8 bits. So 255 is the max value. 255 entries are there. They're all sequenced. And then they start mixing this along with something sprinkled in from the seed until we do certain number of 256 swaps and things like that, we get to the final state, which is a secret inside the encryptor because that's derived from the key. Given the same key, you'll get the same state. And then it generates a bit stream by having some values of I and J, that's part of the algorithm, which picks two bytes from here, adds them together, this will be modulo 255, creates another index and looks up what's in there, and that's the K, which is a bit stream, so we get 8 bits at a time. And this bit stream is XORed with the plain text. So all stream ciphers have that property that you XOR it with the bitstream generated, and it kind of looks like a one-time pad. So obvious question is, how come this is different from a one-time pad? This is brute forcible because you've got a key, but a one-time pad is not brute forcible. So that's something for you to think about. If you get that, you'll understand what's with all this jumbling, that why is this not a one-time pad? It looks like one, but it's not. It's far, far weaker than a one-time pad. Plus, people have found other weaknesses in here. Maybe because of its simplistic arithmetical nature, it's not using S boxes and P boxes and weird transformations and all that stuff, which is being used in both DES and AES, and those have not been broken yet. But it's a very, very cute idea. Like it very much, but we're not supposed to use it. It's broken. Okay, so now let's talk about, so we have a, we have three things, or four things if you count symmetric and asymmetric, that form the basic things, algorithms in cryptography. Now, we have talked about symmetric encryption mainly. I mentioned asymmetric encryption, but I didn't get into the topic. Next, we'll do random numbers and hash functions. So one of the mysteries that we have is how do we generate random numbers? Okay, we all know that human beings are terrible at picking random numbers. Pick a random number between 0 and 9. You know, run this test, most people will think of the prime numbers 3, 5, 7. Okay, hardly anybody will pick 0, which is just as random as any other, or 9, which is just as random as any other. So what is a random number between 0 and 9? All of these numbers chosen with equal probability. That's one way of stating it. But we want to use a computer to generate random numbers, because we need random numbers for nonsense. You cannot write a program to generate a random number. I just made that statement. Do you agree? You can use a random function. Well, that function has been written by somebody. How did he or she write it? Can you write it? Forget about functions called random. Why can't you write a program? Computers are deterministic, and if you write a program that generates a number every time you run it, you'll get the same number. And if you use that number to generate another number, then you get a sequence of random numbers which will be exactly the same every time that sequence is generated. It's all predictable. So you need some form of input into this program to get it started with some unknown number, but that input should be a random number. And that's your problem. You need a random number to generate a random number. And even the second random number that you generate will not be random, it will be pseudo-random. And then we have to talk about, are pseudo-random numbers any good in cryptographic applications? We've come to the conclusion, yeah, they're okay, they're not the greatest. So the only correct way to generate a random number So physics people, physicists have agreed that there is a lot of randomness in nature. From the macro things like weather, wind currents, and strange electrical signals that appear when you have a radio that's not tuned properly, down to subatomic particles or atoms and things like that, they vibrate should be very harmonic, but they're not. They have some random motions in there, Brownian motion and all that. So can we tap into nature and get random numbers? And the answer is yes, if you have the proper hardware to do it. And one simple method is to use a mistuned radio, audio noise, or microphones in a crowd or something like that. And somehow in cryptography, those are not used much. The only thing that cryptographic seed generators seem to use is inter-arrival delay of network packets and things like that. Or some crypto algorithms use human mouse movements. But whatever it is, so it has become accepted practice that you use some outside phenomena to generate one or a few random numbers because it's not very quick, it takes time, and you use those random numbers as a seed into a pseudo-random number generator. It has also been... It has also been pushed by the cryptographic community that hardware CPU manufacturers should put some sort of nature-based random number generators on every CPU or add-on hardware so that we can get random numbers generated on the computer. That has not happened. Well, it's not true that has not happened. About 5 years ago, Intel put a random number generator on their CPUs. So a random number generator is available, but cryptographers do not use it because there's enough suspicion that that random number generator is bugged in some way. And it's interesting to watch an interview with Intel CEO at that point. I mean, you can Google it and see there's an interview where they kept on asking him, how trustable is this, a real random number generator, or is it bugged? And he wouldn't answer the question. So that was the end of the Intel random number generator. So we do not have a hardware random number generator. So that's a problem that's inherent. And a lot of the older crypto algorithms, even SSL and things like that, were broken because of the use of poor random number generators. So what's the theory behind generation of random numbers? There's a class of algorithms called PRNG. Pseudo-random number generators, and they work as follows. Obviously, there's a seed that is inputted into your PRNG, and it generates a sequence of numbers. And how do you define numbers? Because this sequence of numbers is identical to a sequence of bits. And if you think your number is a hexadecimal stream, so you take 4 bits, and that's your number. If your random numbers are between 0 and 1023, then you take 10 bits, and that's a sequence of numbers. So that's up to the application to decide what is a number. How many bits per number? It could be down to 1 bit or a lot of bits. Okay? But we want some property of this. Now, random numbers, sequence of random numbers is very heavily used in simulations. And what we want is statistical randomness. So very simply put, if I'm looking at hexadecimal numbers generated by a random number generator, and we look at millions or tens of millions of these numbers on a sequence from a certain seed, then every number in the hexadecimal number space, which is 0 through 15, should appear with equal probability. And that is one statistical test that you can perform on random number generators. There is more. There are more. So frequency test is the one I just talked about, which is maybe I shouldn't say equal probability, but equal instances. So if you're looking at numbers from 0 through 9 and you got a million, one-tenth of them should be zeros, one-tenth of them should be ones. But then, if I generate the sequence 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, it'll pass the frequency test. And it's definitely not random. Okay? So this is not enough of a test to say, is this sequence picking 0 through 9 randomly. Okay? So how do we do that? So we invent a few other tests. This is also does not quite do it. You take the serial test, pick two digits. We are assuming that the generated numbers have been clustered to hexadecimal numbers or whatever kind of numbers. So there are numbers in this sequence. And you pick two digits of those numbers and check the frequency of occurrence of those two digits. And so like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 will fail because 1, 2 is occurring, 2, 3 is occurring, but 2, 2 is not. Okay? So that kind of breaks up the monotony of things that don't quite work right, but it fails on some other sequences. So we use a battery of tests to see how good is the random number generator. So we got the frequency test, the serial test. We have the poker test, which I don't understand well, which says that a sequence of five numbers. And certain sequences of five numbers, not all, and it doesn't say whether you're testing for frequency or something, and it's based on a poker algorithm, and since I don't play poker, I don't understand how this works. Gap test says so you check the distance between two zeros or two ones or two threes and check how far away they are, and it should vary in a certain distribution. The distribution will not be a fixed distribution. Then you calculate how the distances should vary statistically, and you check with the random number, is it following the same statistical probabilities as the predicted distribution by doing permutation combination theory and all that stuff. So these are the statistical tests. Now, whole thing is theoretical. Now, how do you build a random number that will pass these and more statistical tests of randomness? Number one. Number two, if you can generate one, can you use it for cryptographic algorithms, or is there a difference between statistical randomness and cryptographic randomness? Okay? Firstly, in real randomness, there is no seed. There is no algorithm. It is just appears. Numbers appear by monitoring atomic movements or something like that, or white noise. Those are points. If you digitize white noise and you pick every 10th number that you are getting, that sequence will be very random, and it's not out of any seed, not out of any algorithm. It's just from observation. So this is definitely a different approach. And how does it compare to real randomness? Pseudo-random number generators, XORed with plain text, will give you something that looks like RC4. That is, it's a one-time pad, but not really. Real random numbers XORed with plain text will give you a one-time pad. So there is a difference. Yes?
If we have the source of a true random for the seed, then why don't we just use that?
That's a good question. I don't understand that, but I'll try and answer the question saying that the thing that is giving you the seed is a slow process. You cannot keep on generating a lot from it, number one. Number two, you don't trust that very well because it may not be that true. And if it's not that true, you don't want to have any kind of correlations. Like if you use a computer time, ticking, the system clock. The system clock always goes up. You can use a mod function on it, so it'll. But is it really true randomness, or somebody can make some guesses? So kind of hand-waving, let's just pick one of these. Maybe it's not truly random, but okay. And then create a random number sequence that meets a whole bunch of cryptographic requirements. And that's how we do it today. And we all hope it'll change, and we'll change to true randomness someday, if it's possible. So most random number generators, a lot of random number generators are linear congruence generators. Now, linear congruence generators pass most statistical tests. It does not pass cryptographic tests, which we'll talk about in a minute. it generates a random number xn plus 1 based on another random number xn, x0 being the seed, and you get a sequence. You have to pick A and C carefully, and also n. N would be the maximum minus 1 of the numbers you want. So if your numbers are between 0 and 9, n should be 10. And that will, or if it's a bit, then you can set it to 1. Or 2, rather. But, so why can't we use this? It passes statistical tests. Well, you can easily predict if you know ANC. Now, are ANC secrets? Is this supposed to be secrets? And if I keep it secret, how do we generate those? We get into trouble here. But in the statistical randomness, there's no need for secrecy. We just want a sequence of random numbers that we will use for some statistical modeling, simulation, whatever it is. So it, the fact that xn plus 1 is predictable from xn is not much of a concern. Okay? So that kind of lets the cat out of a bag. If somebody is generating random numbers, then if you get to know a random number, you should not be able to say anything about the next number that he or she will pick as a random number, because that's true for natural random numbers or real random numbers. So there should be no connection between xn and xn plus 1. So I want a crypto-secure random number. And if I can generate these things using an algorithm from a seed, then I will call that algorithm CSPRNG, crypto-secure pseudo-random number generator. That's what we want. Okay. So what is a crypto-secure random number? Crypto-secure random number means you have this machine that generates... Essentially, real random numbers are crypto-secure because if you have a long sequence of random numbers and then you want to know what the next number... The next number, what will it be? You already know these numbers. Can I predict the next number or a few bits of the next number or the range of values that the next number would be given this sequence of random numbers that I already know about, which came from one seed maybe. Now in a real random number sequence, that next number has got nothing to do with the previous numbers. It's not using an algorithm, it's not using a seed, so there's no connection between the next number and the sequence of random numbers. If you're using a pseudo-random number generator, then there is a connection. That is, the next number is being generated by something that is using a seed to create all these numbers and then create another number. Okay? But that connection should not be, how do I put it, an attacker should not be able to guess or mathematically analyze this sequence and come up with some property of the next number. So I'm being a little vague here, but essentially you should not be able to predict any future random numbers based on what you've seen so far. That's not true for linear congruence generators. That's not true for any statistical generators. But the statistical tests are tests of a good random number generation, but not of a good crypto-secure random number generation. So this is one, I'll hand wave two things and get down to a little bit more detail. This is one thing that kind of gives you an idea what is a pseudo-random number generator that's cryptographically secure. The prediction of the next numbers should not be possible. Yeah?
Isn't this just an encryption algorithm and the CD is the key?
How do you build it is, yeah, you can use an encryption algorithm, you can use a hash algorithm, you can use all kinds of things. So, but we want to attribute a property of these numbers, regardless of what you use. So like RC4 is an encryption algorithm, which is really a random number generator using a seed. And the key, you'll have to do something else because the key is a seed. It generates one number based on what is the data. So, what is this called? So from this we can say this is the next number test. And there is something else called it's obvious, think about the RC4 random number generator. There is a state inside this machine or this algorithm. All the numbers generated are generated by manipulating that state because there is no input other than the initial seed. So let's say an attacker gets a hold of the exact state of the random number generator. What can the attacker do now? Can it predict the future random numbers?
No, because the state will change.
But the state will change, but the state is changing according to what? You know the algorithm, you know the state.
Okay.
What if you just run the algorithm with that state? You get it? There's a state, let's say it's 10. How do I generate a next random number? I take this state and I multiply it by 25, take modulus 3 and square it and this and the other. There's some kind of an algorithm. Once I know the algorithm and the state, you can generate the sequence, I can generate the sequence. We both have become identical people. Yeah. State is the secret. State is the secret. So the point is, if the state leaks out, then the secret is out. Seed is secret, but the state came from the seed. Okay, if the seed leaks out, the entire sequence is leaked. If the seed was running for some time, the seed is gone now, because we only keep the state. The seed could be part of the state, but something is there. All the data variables of every piece of data in that code is the state. And if that state leaks out, all future random numbers will be compromised, leaked. That's a given. There is no way around it. I cannot say a random number generator should not be predictable based on the seed, based on the state, because it is a deterministic program. Okay, so that's fine. If the state is compromised, sequence of... That's more important. If the state is revealed, then you should not be able to get the past. Of course, you can get the future. But before that point, I got a sequence of numbers. I can now find out the rest of it. I should not be able to find out the previous ones unless if I already know it. That's a tough one. So essentially, given a sequence, you can't find future. Given a future or the state, you can't find past, which is all true for real random numbers. So we are trying to mimic real random numbers with a computer algorithm. Okay? So how can we do this? Okay, the more formal thing. So this is the formalization of the next number test. Can you predict, let's say I have a random number generator that I claim to be good. Maybe it's really a real random numbers or natural random numbers. And I showed you a sequence and I ask you to say, what will be the next bit generated? Can you predict that? It's a trick question. Can you predict the next bit? Deterministically. Yeah, I can. It's zero. You don't get it, huh? It's zero with 50% accuracy, which is quite a high accuracy. You can run websites predicting, you know, sex of a baby or whatever. You just pick a number and money back guarantee, half the money you keep. Okay? So anybody can predict the next bit with 50% accuracy. The next bit says, is there any method that will give you a higher than 50%? It doesn't have to be correct. 100% accuracy is every time, given any sequence, I can predict the bit correctly. I don't need 100%. I need 51%, 50.5%. And no, there shouldn't be a method. Now, how do you actually prove this, that here's an algorithm, can you really predict the next bit with 50% accuracy? That is a much harder problem. That's what cryptographers worry about. We don't. Okay? So next bit test will give you the probability of predicting the next bits. And the state compromise test will be the probability of predicting the previous bit. And if we say that we can meet both of these, then we can have a random number generator that works, pseudo-random number generator. And we do not know how to do it other than to resort to tricks. Now, there are three One we have talked about, nature, which is the best. So nature will be able to give us random numbers. Math, how do you do it using math? That's the one we'll look at. Crypto algorithms, you've seen RC4. Not a good one, but there's more. I can show you some. Somebody said, use encryption. Yeah, you can use encryption. Use hash functions. You can use hash functions. But those are ad hoc algorithms. Math. There is a where is the Blum Blum? Yeah, Blum Blum Shab is a well, three people, last names, that invented this algorithm to generate pseudorandom numbers, CryptoSecure. By the way, I forgot to mention, but it's obvious that if you pass the CryptoSecure test, like the next bit test and the previous bit test, in fact, just the next bit test, if you pass that, you pass every possible statistical tests. So CryptoSecure random numbers supersede statistical random numbers. They'll always be statistically secure, and we want the next bit test to make it CryptoSecure, and we want the previous bit test or state compromise test to make sure it's crypto secure. So now we want to have a crypto secure algorithm. A crypto secure algorithm, can we build one? Blum Blum Shab would be the one to go. Blum Blum Shab says it's a simple that's not the whole story. You should generate random numbers by picking a seed. That seed, or really xn, is the state. So it starts with x0 is the state. From x0, we build x1, which will be x0 squared mod n. N is a public number, because that's the max size of the random numbers. And actually, it generates a bit. Anyway, we'll get to that. And P times Q. Now, it is very common in cryptography to use a product of primes. RSA did that. You keep P and Q secret, you throw it away, and you keep the product of primes, that is N. And so you use X, you square the X, and you do a modulo N. So that way, you're kind of throwing out numbers, truncating them. So if you have the value X squared, there is a rule saying you cannot find square roots of numbers. It's called the discrete log problem. I won't get into it now. We will look at it later. Is that if I tell you what's the square, if I give you a number, can you find its square root? The answer is obviously true in case of natural numbers. That is, we know how to find square root of numbers. But when you do a mod n, you can't find it. And in fact, there are four square roots. You can't find any of them and things like that. Okay? So let's say it's true for large numbers, but if n is equal to 15, that is 3 times 5, and we square a number like 4, 4 squared will be equal to? No, there is no 16. 1. So square root of 1 is equal to plus minus 4. So that will be equal to 4 and? No. Minus 4. So that will be 11. Now 11 is the square root of 1. Is that true? Did I get 11 correctly? Minus 1 will be 14, 13, 12, 11. 11 squared is 121. 121, yeah, I think it's true.
Why is 1, 4, 4?
And that, like, messes things up really bad. So 4 squared is 1, square root of 1 is 4. And it'll also be minus 4. Minus 4 is 11. Yeah. Because 4 squared is equal to 1. And if 4 squared is equal to 1, square root of 1 is 4.
Like you're getting 4 squared equal to 1, it's like 16 or 15.
Yes. So I've suddenly forgotten all math. I only do mod 15 math. All numbers are 0 through 14. Okay? So if I square 4, I'll get 1. If I square 5, I'll get whatever, 10. Okay? And 10, 5 is the square root of 10. Find me an algorithm that computes that. You can brute force it. Small set. So that's where it gets tricky. Okay, we're not done with this. But if I know Xn, I can predict the future. I mean, you know. So if the sequence of numbers is Xn plus 1, Xn plus 2, Xn plus 3, from any number I can predict the rest. So this sounds like a broken algorithm. It's not. The actual output of BBS at each stage, you're generating these numbers, x1, x2, x3. At each stage, when you generate a number, you output the parity bit of that number. You calculate the parity, and you generate one bit. Now, from that sequence, you cannot reconstruct anything past or future. And that, there is a long, complicated math proof for that. That this works. So we'll say our problem is solved in that we found a random number generator. If you find a random number generator good, pseudo-random number, then you can do encryption, you can do hashing. All of these are transformable. So why are we messing with DES, AES when we can use BBS to generate random sequences and you do XOR in a stream cipher, we are done. But we don't go that route. In fact, BBS is not used in real life. Anything good, we have to throw it out for other reasons. BBS is very slow, very slow. How do you square a large number? How large? 128-bit, 256-bit? How do you square them? And plus, you have to not only square them, you have to take the modulus.
Multiply?
Can a computer multiply? Keep adding? You know that thing about large numbers? You'll take trillions of years. You know, it's in the range of 128 bits. So you've got to add 2 to the power 128 times. There's not enough time in the world to do that. So you've got to do a square operation. It can be done. Can you just multiply? Computers multiply, don't they? Why am I being stupid?
Well, I'm shifting for numbers in the power.
You have to do that in software. Bit shifting, adding. And even adding, multiplying can't be done. Because 64 bits is the max you can multiply. When you multiply two 64-bit numbers, what is the number of bits in the result? 128. So you multiply two 64-bit numbers, that can be done on a computer. You get a 128-bit. Now you cannot do anything with this 128-bit because we have no 128-bit operations. So multiplying on a computer, 64-bit computers only multiply 32-bit numbers. And 32-bit computers multiply 16-bit numbers. It's just horrible. So that's why a lot of your programs don't work. But, so, how do you do it? Bit shifting is one, or you can use larger, you know, human beings multiply large numbers, but we only know the tables from 0 through 9. Okay? Use similar techniques. And I'll show you one, but there are methods of doing that. Not right now. But it's slow. So multiplying a large number can be done using software. Shift, add. Add means you really add, break it up into chunks and add, because you can't add those big numbers. And then you have to do a modular operation, so you've got to write code to do all that. And once you're done, you get 1 bit of output. Maybe it takes half a second to get a bit of output. That's not going to work. Okay? So we fall back on crypto algorithms. There are two ways of doing it. One is broken, one is not. Let's try the... This is called encryption in counter mode. Counter mode encryption says you pick a well-known initialization vector. The initialization vector can be zero. There's nothing secret about that. The secret is the key. So you generate a number, which is the encryption of the initialization vector and the key. That's your first number. Given that somebody, you give it to somebody for, you know, encryption, decryption purposes, messaging, given that number, you cannot find the key, even though you know the initialization vector. And then, for the next random number, you increment the key by one. and you generate another one. The next is key plus 2, key plus 3. That's your state. Your state is the current value of the key. One would say that suffers from state compromise. Does it suffer? It does suffer from state compromise. So you've got to use feedbacks and various other things to make it. So this is a simple case, but it doesn't work very well, because you can run the key backwards. And the other method What's wrong with this one? If I know the key is known. This is absolutely wrong. The key is known. The initialization vector is the key, and the data, plain text, is the seed which you're incrementing, counter mode. That wouldn't work, because if somebody knows the key, they can know the data. You can decrypt. Okay? So this is wrong. So you've got to be careful which one you keep secret. This one's correct, but you have to fix the state compromise problem. And that can be fixed by hashing and all kinds of things. Again, state compromise won't work, but you seed in counter mode with a hash function. We've not covered hash functions, but that's another method. Yeah?
So I didn't understand what were the last two screens. Like, what is?
How do you build a random number generator without using math? Use an encryption algorithm.
Okay.
So that'll be much faster. And you use it by having some data that you're encrypting. The data is just zeros, initialization vector. The key, the seed is the key to encrypt. And every time you encrypt, you increment the seed to plus one.
Okay.
And that way, you can generate lots of random numbers. But it's not a completely good one, because we are suffering from state compromise there. Okay. So why is... Encryption algorithms, we have a standard, AES. There are other standards, DES, RC4. hash functions, there are standards. SHA is the currently accepted standard. There was MD5, and there's a whole bunch of others also. What's the standard for random number generation? And strangely, I don't understand why there is none. But there are two things, and I'm going to talk about these, called hash DRBG and HMAC DRBG. These are techniques and not a standard recipe. Okay? DRBG, this is a terminology used by NIST, alphabet soup here. NIST has come up with these two standards. This DRBG stands for deterministic . They just changed the CSPRNG into DRBG for whatever reason, and they've published a standard that should be followed when implementing random number generators. And the standard looks like kind of like this. Okay, well, that's just a page. If you look at the index, and yes, I've tried reading this, it's close to 100 pages long. That's just how to build a random number generator. You can search for NIST.SP.800. You'll find this document. And it goes on and on and on. I'm not sure if this is the correct way to write standards, but this is the official document on how to generate random numbers. And if you write a random number generator, you should be compliant. How do you prove that? I don't know. If you want a random number generator, you pick one from a cryptographic package like OpenSSL or Java's cryptographic package. They have random number generators in there. And those random number generators sometimes cause problems. So there is no accepted, here is one particular piece of code that is a standard random number generator. Pseudo-random number generator, that is. So this is a huge document. How to do seeds, how to do rekeying, how to do whatever. Entropy and seed privacy, the nonsense. Take a quick look at this. So, the hash DRBG, some of people prefer the HMAC DRBG. The hash DRBG is really generating numbers by using a hash function in counter mode, the one that I showed you, with some fixes that makes the state compromise go away. The counter is not incremented one by one, but another function of something, modulo something, etc. Okay? So that can be fixed. That document says how to fix the counter, and that's the hash DRBG. HMAC-DRBG, I'm not going to explain, there is a well-known function called HMAC that is constructed from a It's a complex function, but if you look at HMAC on Wikipedia, you'll see the formula. You take a hash function, you take a key, and you take an input, you produce output, there's some padding, and there's a whole process of how to construct a HMAC. So instead of using a hash function, they're using an HMAC function, which is also a hash function, modified. So you can take SHA and do the first one. You can take SHA and the prescription for how to construct an HMAC function out of SHA and do the second one. A little bit stronger. Yeah, you had a question? No. So that's the story behind random number generation. Okay, I'm going to just introduce hash functions and talk about them next time. Standard hash function is a one-way function that takes input and produces output. The input is of unbounded size, not infinity. There's nothing infinite about any computer or anything. So it's always a finite input, but it's we don't say anything about the size of the input. Could be small, could be large, could be all zeros, could be whatever. But when run through the function, it'll pick an output deterministically that consists of a fixed size, so n bit. And in cryptographic applications, this n is chosen as 256. At least 256. So how does this work, and why is a standard hash function not crypto-secure? We have the same story here. There are hash functions, and there are crypto-secure hash functions. Hash functions are used in lots of cases, indexing, searching, and all that stuff, but there you need statistical hashing. That is, given a collection of input, the hash will scatter it over a domain of numbers. But crypto-secure hashing is a little bit harder. So let's say a reasonably good statistical hashing is you take this input and you only keep the n least significant bits of it. And that's the hash of that input. You take pictures, take only the least significant bits of it, it'll be pretty random. And you cannot reconstruct the input from the output because the output is only a part of the input. Okay? And a lot of people do that but it's not a crypto-secure hash. Why is it not a crypto-secure hash? Crypto-secure hash, amongst various things, says So you have a piece of data, you have a piece of output, I'm using the same output here. This is data prime. So I got the output. I cannot recreate the input data, of course. Can I create any data that will match the output? That when hashed will give me the output? The answer is no. If I'm taking the least significant bits, then it's very easy. Just have the least significant bits that will come to the same hash. It's not the input, but it's something else that produces the same hash, which is a collision. Essentially, this says, and impossible in quotes. Of course you can. You can just use brute force, but it'll take too long. Infeasible, rather. That is, given a hash, you cannot construct an input that will lead to this hash. Except for edge cases. Take a standard hash function, SHA. Take the input, all zeros. Produce a hash value. That will be the correct hash value for zeros. Now, if you see that hash value, the input is zero. So you can create an input that matches that hash value. That is, if you have a dictionary of inputs and you create all the hashes, and if I see a hash and my hash exists in the dictionary, I can reverse it. But without the dictionary, you cannot reverse it. Hash reversal is done for password cracking using dictionaries and various other things, but that's because we kind of know what the passwords look like. Otherwise, you cannot do that. So is this even possible, and how is it done? This is the most difficult to understand. So I've got if I have an m-bit set of input, m is in the millions or billions range. That's the size of my file in number of bits. A megabit file is common. Megabyte file is common. Hundreds of megabits are also common. But the hash value is 2 to the power 56. So how many different inputs will meet the same hash? You divide, you get 2 to the power m minus n. This is a huge number. So there are that many collisions. It's not like there is no collision. There are this many collisions given a hash value. You cannot find a single one. And if you believe that, then the hash theory works. That's absolutely collision-free, even though they are potentially infinite number of collisions. So that's what we'll talk about, of how, why is this property even something that we think is true? It is true. And how do we construct these things? Very important. Hashing is unbelievably important in cryptography. It sounds like why are we doing this? Encryption, we understand. What's with hashing? Well, it's very important. We'll see all that. Okay, any questions?
Professor. I didn't have a chance to look at the sign of description until this morning. And I just want to clarify, because at the top it says that it's to be performed in groups of two.
Hmm.
Okay, is it okay if I create like a discussion board post? On,
oh, yeah, yeah, sure,
okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
For the project one which is there, can we use a pre-existing code, or is it you have to make a code from the scratch?
Project?
For the project.
No, you're supposed to build it. From scratch, and you can keep it simple, and it doesn't have to be strong, proper. Anyway, it's 32 bits.
I was asking because of that, and because it's a 32 bit when you make that ECB for it. Won't it be a bit difficult because.
ECB is the null function. ECB is nothing. You just have to build the encryptor, and then you're not doing any of the chaining or anything.
But when you are, see, suppose you have a string or anything that you are comparing in the ECB book which is there, the code book which is there, isn't it like you refer to that code book?
No, you don't refer to it. You build an algorithm. There is no code book. It just says it's like a code book. That's why it's called ECB.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody builds code books. You write an algorithm that takes two inputs and produces an output.
I mean, we can use a Caesar cipher or something.
Something better than Caesar cipher.
Yeah, okay.
But Caesar cipher, you'll need a code book of mm-hmm. some sort. Or you're just adding something to it.
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
For that, there might be